We probably reach maybe 400,000 kids, roughly somewhere in that neighborhood, every year in some fashion or another, with clean water, with a Bible club, with just an outreach or, you know, some kind of emergency aid. There's never going to be enough money and enough to fix all of the world's problems. And, you know, the Bible says the poor will always be with you. Jesus says you'll always have the poor with you. And so sometimes that's hard. That's just a mental challenge. You want to help these people. You want to provide things that they need, that, you know, to help them to better their lives and to, you know, to share the message, gospel message with them. It can be really difficult thinking, I'm never going to do everything. I'm never going to fix all of it. And we created a 25-year book that has all these testimonies. And in the beginning of that book, I wrote about the story. There's all these crabs on the beach and they're stranded and it's low tide. And there's a boy throwing them in one by one. And the old man comes up and says, what are you doing? Why are you throwing the crabs in? You're never going to save all these crabs. It's just futile. You're wasting your time. And the boy says, as he throws one more in there, he says, matter to that one. So you can think, we'll never fix all this. We'll never get this all done. But if you just have a defeatist attitude about it, you're never going to say, there's one crab, there's one more, there's one more, there's one more. You just keep doing one more. And if that's all you can do, that's what you do.
It still hits, I don't miss it. It's go, 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 like a go, go flow. And I'm almost known. And I told y'all so. When I throw these flows, like it's Rochambeau. And I ain't too close, it's Joe Smo goes. And I'm on my grind, that is all the time. I do not do breaks, that's right, I stay in dry. And look, I'm back with a little bit of that. A little more cash than I came in with. Ready, that cat is out that bag. But I still ask, the boy got skills. I don't need her, I don't need him. I don't need help with me, I got this. I can sing songs, I can spit raps. And I can do both, even do this. Word.
Before we dive into today's episode, I want to take a moment to personally thank the incredible sponsors who helped make it possible for us to film this episode in Kenya. Jonathan's Restaurant, Royal Bakery, Frozen Cow, The Pest Rangers, Elevation Wellness, Red's Barbershop, Axelrad, The Cato Agency, and PA Inclusive. I also want to express my deepest gratitude to my family and friends, whether you supported this journey financially or just cheered me on every step of the way. Your support doesn't just keep the show going. It helps us bring these important stories to life and share them with the world. This episode is brought to you by Anthracite Pallet Solutions. Need reliable, durable pallets to keep your business moving? At Anthracite Pallet Solutions, we specialize in new and used 48x40 wooden pallets. Whether you're shipping, storing, or stacking, we offer high-quality pallets that keep your operations running smoothly. With our own fleet of trucks and trailers, we deliver on time, every time. And if warehouse space is a concern, our drop trailer services have you covered. From custom orders to large-scale deliveries, we're here to meet your every need with top-notch customer service and unbeatable prices. We're currently shipping within 2 hours of Scranton, Pennsylvania, including Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, and Maryland. Call us today at 570-606-9206 or inquire online at anthracitepallet.com and let us handle your pallet solutions. Anthracite Pallet Solutions, built to last. Designed to move. This episode is brought to you by the Pest Rangers. Finding insects in your home can be a real pest. I know I felt that way when I discovered termites living rent-free in my house. But thanks to the team at the Pest Rangers, I'm no longer bugging out over this issue. So if any creepy crawlers are cramping your style, there's no if-ands or bugs about it. You gotta call the Pest Rangers. For more information on how to rid your home from unwanted pests, call the Pest Rangers today at 570-826-1114 or visit them online at thepestrangers.com. This episode is brought to you by Sweat Tent, the pioneers of the portable wood-burning sauna. Did you know that using the sauna 3 to 4 times per week could reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease by up to 50% and make you 60% less likely to experience Alzheimer's disease? That's why I've been a big fan of the sauna for years. But having to go to a crowded gym to do it isn't ideal. And all the at-home options are bulky and expensive. That's why I only use the Sweat Tent for my sauna needs. It's the most storable and affordable wood-burning sauna on the market. It not only takes minutes to set up, but it can reach 200 degrees Fahrenheit in 30 minutes or less. So whether you're enjoying it yourself in your backyard, with friends, or in need of a reliable sauna on the go, Sweat Tent is your best choice for the most portable, storable, and enjoyable outdoor sauna experience. All On The Stacks listeners will receive $100 off when you use code OTS. Visit sweattent.com today to get $100 off your purchase with code OTS at checkout. Again, that's sweattent.com to get $100 off with code OTS. Sweat Tent, helping you fire up your home wellness routine. Tim Dable, welcome to the On The Stacks podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to be here. We are in Kenya for Dirt Project number 6.
Yeah.
We have some drilling going on here. They were kind enough to take a break and let us let us do this interview here and quiet before right before we started. The ground was shaking, and I'm not sure how far they got yet, but it seems like they're making some good progress.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Yeah. So what are we looking at here?
Well, we're looking at a water project for this local village here, Ogiek Village, and it's one of many water projects that we've partnered with David Mina here in Kenya on over the years. And it's number 6 for Dirt Project with Joshua Salvatera, who you already talked to and did a podcast with. And he and I partnered, we knew his mom for many years. She's been a close ministry partner. And he called me up one day in 2013 and said, "You guys do anything like that machine gun preacher?" And I said, "Well, no, we don't really do that. But I said, we do water projects, and maybe you want to do a water well." And he started by doing one water well, and then he's been getting everybody involved ever since. Now we're on number 6.
Yeah.
Awesome.
How many of these have you guys been part of? Like, how many have you? I know you probably maybe not go on to every site.
I won't go details. I think I don't even know. Somebody asked me the other day how many, and I've got a sheet of all of the stuff that we've
countless.
Done. It maybe not countless, but it's up there. It's hundreds and hundreds. Little projects, like sometimes it's just a water tank for maybe like a women's group or a catchment system for a roof. And then up to these big deep water wells like this that we're looking at right here. And you know, this one he said is going to maybe go to 260 meters. So for all us Americans, I don't even know how deep that
is. It's pretty deep.
It's very deep. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a big variety of stuff that we've done over the years with David, and it's really amazing to be able to come and actually see it getting drilled. We came once and we actually got to work the small drill rig.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, Joshua and I together.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun. We get to kind of get in there and get in the mix and, you know, everything like that. So we're not going to work this one.
Yeah, this one's a little bit bigger.
A little more complicated. Yeah. So
a little more expertise needed here.
Exactly. Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things I really enjoy, you know, from, you know, being here, we've been here for about a week so far, mm-hmm. and, you know, coming up the road, you could just see, you know, some of the people are gathered here behind us, but mm-hmm. coming up the road when we arrived, there was just a sea of the people here from the village singing and dancing mm-hmm. and just so happy for us to be here. And, you know, like I've said it so many times, like, I mean, I'm grateful to be here too. And, you know, everybody says the same thing here. That's the commonality between everyone. And it's so amazing to see. Like, I've never, you know, up until coming here to Kenya, I've never experienced anything like this. I mean, you've been all over the world because you guys have sites everywhere. So what has your experience been like in other countries? Is it similar to this?
I will tell you, there's nothing really like Africa. The welcome that you get, the big smiling faces, that, you know, just the whole, you saw it. That's what it's like. The whole village is dancing in you know, front of you when you come up, and they're celebrating and they're just so overjoyed to have you come and have the visitors come and thankful for the project. It's really their heart to say thank you, because they know we're taking time out of our schedule. We're flying another country. You know, it's a long drive. It's hard. And they're just expressing their gratitude for us coming and doing that and helping them. And it's really a blessing to me and to our team to come and see the projects like this. The same thing when we travel around other places, but we don't necessarily get the jumping welcome that we do in Africa. That's pretty amazing. So you guys, you know, coming here, you guys got a treat. It's a treat to come and to be here and to have that kind of welcome from the Africans, and very similar in other places, but it's
so the people here are very special.
They're special. Kenyans especially. You know, you come and they're just warm and open, and you know, they want to just say thank you
and feed us.
They're going to feed you. They're going to take care of you. They're going to make sure you have everything.
That's one of the craziest things I find. Especially because of the amount of poverty here that there is in Kenya. Mm-hmm. You know, some of these people, you know, compared to, you know, us in America, you know, we have so much, you know, mm-hmm. at our fingertips every single day. And, you know, these people, when we come here, they're preparing meals and just giving away, like, which is very precious to them, especially the water.
Yep.
And the generosity mm-hmm. of these people,
who have nothing or less than nothing.
Yeah.
It's just incredible.
Yeah.
It's so incredible to see. Yeah. So I'm just, like I said, I'm really grateful to be here. This is probably, by the way, probably one of the largest. I'm looking around because there's people gathered all around us here. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've ever, we've done a couple on-site. I might have been telling you, I might not have, but we did a couple about a year ago. We went down to Nashville, Tennessee in the United States, and we did a few episodes down there. And that was like our first road show a year ago. And this is our second road show. Mm-hmm. So we did it in the United States. So we went from like one extreme to the other. We're like, we could do it. Nashville, we drove 12 hours, Eric and I, down to Nashville. Yeah. And we got four really good episodes down there with some musicians and some other people.
Cool.
But that was phenomenal. But to be able to come here to Kenya, it was like a whole nother level.
It's a different story.
Yeah. Plus, we were afraid to fly with all the equipment to Nashville because we'd never done that before.
Yeah.
Obviously we had to fly it here, so we're like,
gotta commit.
We'll figure it out, right? And so we're here, and so take me back a little bit. Your father started Kids for the Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
I know you weren't always involved. You were on the board originally.
Yep.
Take me back a little bit, maybe growing up. So you're from California.
Yeah.
We're opposite coasts. I'm on the East Coast. I'm in PA. So what was life like growing up in California and seeing your dad start this organization?
It was good. We had a good life. We grew up on an apple ranch in Sonoma County. I got three brothers. We used to just run around out in the dirt all summer, no shoes, everything like that. Really good life. And my dad worked in various nonprofits. He originally actually worked in a prison ministry where we actually got to go with him into San Quentin Prison and meet prisoners and everything like that. So he did this prison ministry outreach in all the prisons in California. He ran that. And then he moved into international nonprofits. And that's where he started to make the relationships that kind of built Kids for the Kingdom going forward. And he worked in a couple different ones, and he worked as a journalist, and he would write kind of, independent articles for some news magazines. And that kind of spun into him going on these trips and meeting people and getting to know the local teams. And he would go into these countries and he would meet somebody, and he would walk around and he would find the person that was doing an outreach out of their own heart, not someone, because there's kind of two things that happen. Is one is people will say, if you give me money, I'll do this thing. The other is the people that are already doing that is their heart, and they're doing it out of the goodness of their heart. And so he found people that were doing that already, the work that needed to be done, helping orphans on the streets, helping widows, those kinds of things. And he built that into Kids for the Kingdom over the years. And eventually it got big enough where he thought, we need a full-time person. This needs to be actually run by a full-time person. And they started looking for somebody, and they came and talked to me. And I kind of was like, I'd been on the board since the start. And I kind of was like, I don't really know if I should do that. I don't know if I want to do that, And then God said to me, you need to do that. That's your, this is the thing that I want you to do. So I took the position, started running it full time in about 2012. And it has grown even since then. It's really amazing. And I've gotten to go all over the world. I did actually get to do that growing up because my dad would take me on trips.
Oh, so you did get to
travel
a bit?
So I did get to travel a bit. I even got to live in Germany for the summer when I was like 16 years old with some friends there. And so I've had some really cool experiences and been able to travel, go to Mexico, go to Nicaragua, with my dad. So I had that background of understanding kind of, you grew up working in the family business and the family business. So it's kind of the family business.
Yeah. Same thing. I was telling you on the car right in here, we had a couple hour drive on the way in, and I was telling you, we were just getting to know each other a little bit, and I was telling you how, I'm only a few months removed from from working for my family's business now, doing the podcast full time, and so I know the dynamic. I know everything that goes into. Yeah. We all wear many different hats working in a family business, but. I will say, it's taught me, and I'm sure the same for you, and you can probably speak on it too, but it's taught me so much. I've learned to just do so many different roles and things within the company that I never would have gotten that experience anywhere else. And I'm 35 years old, and the way I always explain to everybody, I say the 12 years that I worked at my family's business, I probably got more experience in that 12 years like learning about how to run a business and sales and marketing and just everything else that goes into it than somebody would get working 40 hours a week for, you know, just in one position working for a company for their whole life, right? So it was a challenge, right? Yeah. But a good challenge, and like I said, it really helped, you know, us, you know, just learn and grow and figure out what works and what doesn't. And one of the things I think too is, you know, like comparing it to like a big corporation, for example, like in family businesses, you're able to move a lot faster. Yeah. You're able to make quicker decisions. There's not a lot of red tape. You're able to, you know, do the things that you want to do in the way that you want to do them. So, you know, what was, you know, when you got into it in 2012, you know, what was your expectation? Like, what were you thinking it was going to be? And I know you guys have grown significantly since then. So, you know, kind of taking back to that little bit of that beginning, and then, you know, maybe you could share the story of like kind of how the funding works and how you guys got some funding and been able to expand really all over the globe.
Sure. Yeah. When I first came in, I don't even know if I really had much of an expectation. I don't even know if I really knew what I was getting into.
Sometimes that's the best way, though. Yeah. Otherwise, you wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I knew kinda, and I knew what was there and what we were doing, and that we wanted to continue doing the work that we were doing. But I didn't know. And back then, the funding was tight. It was tough. There was times when we didn't hardly have the money to be able to even send support to our team sometimes, and it was just it was all prayer. We were praying like, when the next dollar's gonna come in, all on faith. And we would get money and we would know, okay, that's the project needs to get done. Sometimes we would say someone would send me a prayer request, I need, you know, $20,000 for this project, and I don't have that money, we don't have it, sorry, we gotta pray about it. So we'd pray about it, and somebody would send us a check for $20,000 sometimes. And I've got so many stories like that over the years before we, you know, were a little more structured with our funding. And then a few years ago, we actually received an endowment, which was really an amazing gift from a relative, a distant relative. We didn't know what was going to happen. And that has been something that's been such a blessing, that's allowed us to kind of have a underpinning all of our stuff, and so that whenever anybody sends any support on top of that, it's able to go all the way, all to the project. So if somebody says, I've got $10,000 to do this thing, I want to do a water well, or I want to do this, that all can go straight to the project. We've got our, you know, all the rest is covered. And so for us, when we look at that and we look at our funding stuff, we love to still have somebody give, because we've got people that give $5 a month. And I've got a faithful donor that gives $5 a month. And I've got other people that give, you know, a lot more money. And that relationship with all of those people that are giving and new people that want to give, it blesses them and it blesses us. And we've got the money to run. And so that when people send, we just say, what do you want us to do? What are we going to do with this? You know, they send it in, designated for something, we go. Now we've got things like this that can happen. You know, so it's been really an amazing journey.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. And, you know, we have some of your team here today. So I see some of the guys sitting around. So, you know, I'm glad you made the time to come out, you know, and meet with us and sit down and do this and, you know, see Josh's project here get kicked off. And give your team who's here with us today a little shout out. Who do we have?
So I've got the media and communications director, Praveen Emanuel. He's the boss of the media office. And then we've got Manoj and Dinesh along with us, and they work doing still photography and videography, and they are just awesome guys. All of them are awesome. I've worked with Emmanuel
almost 20 years. I heard.
Yeah,
right?
Probably. I don't know. It's too many to count. I don't know. We talk about it, you know, our relationship. I was telling you in the car that it's kind of like David and Jonathan kind of thing in the Bible. Like we're like brothers, you know, and it's been a really neat relationship and a really wonderful, like long-term thing to be able to be, you know, his brother and friend, and also work with him. And it's pretty unique to be able to have a relationship like that and work with somebody. I don't think you always get that kind of a thing when you're working with an employee. I don't discount it, because taking it for granted this wouldn't work.
Yeah.
It's too special. So it's really amazing to be able to work with these guys and have them go with me.
Yeah. So prior to the endowment that you guys had received, like, was there various different ways that you guys got funding, like besides just like private donations?
Yeah, we would sometimes get grants. Sometimes there's foundation grants that we'll get sometimes, or, you know, but the majority of it's private donations. The majority of it's just private donations, just small donors. You know, somebody gives 25, somebody gives, I had a guy call me one time and say, I have some stock that I don't need. And I'm thinking, to me, I'm like, my brain wouldn't probably do that, you know? And he said, you know, can I give it to you guys? You know, and I'm like, yes. And that filled a funding gap that we had that we would not have been able to operate without it. And so, you know, I've got multiple stories like this over the years of either getting a project that we prayed about funded or even just our general operating stuff funded. And now that we have the endowment, we're a little more solid, and that's just, it's just amazing. It's another big thing to try to wrap your mind around and manage, you know, more funding. It's a lot of responsibility, but it's really neat. It's really neat to be able to do
so
that.
So what do like the projects like this, like what do these typically cost? I know they probably vary maybe based on country, but what are we talking about here?
So if we're talking here in Kenya, a shallow water well that's up to like 100 feet, you're talking about $3,500 to get that. So if someone donates that to me, we can make that happen here. We stopped at that school on the way up. Those two water wells with the hand pumps,
yep.
That's what you would get. You would get about 100 foot or so deep water well, and that would be done, all the way done, drilled everything. A bigger project like what we're seeing right here with the full drill rig and a deep, 200 and some meter water project, the wells can be $10,000 just for the well, and then they need a pump, and then they don't have electricity, so they need a solar system and some tanks, and so you start getting into the $20,000-$50,000 range. It sort of varies, depending. So typically what we do is we present those things to people and we give them look, this is how much it costs if you want to donate for it. Some people give us, like, I have a donor that gives $65 a month for water. And so I just tell them, you've done this many water wells over, the last 15 years, you've been giving me the money, or some people just want to write a check for the well. It's every different level. We've had people give in memory of, and they want a water well. We just did one of those about 2 years ago for some friends of ours that passed away. It was a church they wanted to do. So lots of different ways to do it. People, church groups, people like Joshua, coming together and getting all their friends together, all different ways.
Yeah. So also too, we were talking about your family back home. So mm-hmm. You have a big family, and not only numbers wise, but tall, right?
Yeah.
We had to adjust the cameras special today to make sure we
sorry,
can get you.
Sorry.
Yeah, make sure we can get you in the frame. So what are you? Six?
About 6'6".
And you're the shortest.
I'm almost the shortest. My youngest brother's a little bit shorter than me.
Yeah. And so you're not the shortest.
I'm not quite the shortest. Whew. I'm close. Yeah, I got two brothers that are taller. My dad's taller. My grandpa was 7 feet tall. Got a cousin that's like 7'3". If there's something in the water in Scotland, Ireland, wherever it was that gene came from. Yeah. So, but I've always had tall family. Got tall uncles. Everybody, So, yeah. And then I've got four daughters, and I've got a grandson that I just had too.
Congratulations.
So I'm kind of feeling old now.
We don't look it.
Yeah. Appreciate that.
So is your dad still involved?
My dad is still involved. He's on the board, and I call him all the time. I talk to him basically every day. We, and I just bounce stuff off of him. He's got so much experience for so many years running various different nonprofits and, all kinds of different stuff that I never had experience with, just because it just isn't what I did. And he'll say, well, I don't know that I would do it that way, but, I'm like, I'm going to do it my way, but I want to hear what you have to say. There might be some way that I tweak it or whatever, because he's got a lot of wisdom and a lot to offer to just give me ideas and bounce stuff off of and everything. So I'm really glad that he's around, that I can still bounce stuff off of him and call him, even if we don't always have the exact same vision.
Yeah. So, you know, how has it been? You know, you and him like flip-flopped, right? So
yeah.
You went from the board, he was the director, and then he was the director.
Yeah,
and
it's just, it is a flip-flop. It's a good working relationship. My family has had property management business over the years. My grandfather was a developer, real estate developer on his, that was his kind of side thing that he did to do retirement. And so we've had property management and real estate development in the family. So I'm used to working with my family, owning things together with my family, things like that. It works in our family. Not every family it works, but it works. So I have a lot of experience doing that. So parlaying that into this and doing the flip flop and those kinds of things, it was pretty smooth. It was good.
So of some of the other countries that you've been to, you know, besides, I think we touched on a little bit before, but you said there's really nothing like Africa, right? There's really nothing like Kenya. But, you know, I know, you know, some of the other countries you mentioned, Russia might have been like an interesting one. But like some of the other ones that you've been to, like what else have you seen out there?
Well, I just recently went to Nepal. And that was an interesting experience. Although, as I was walking around, every corner is a temple to a Hindu god. Everywhere it's a Hindu country. But I realized that my hometown has so much of that kind of stuff because of where I come from that it wasn't really throwing me, you know. So it wasn't so foreign. But Zambia. Been there a bunch of times. We've done a lot of projects in Zambia. Definitely Ghana. You know, Africa's unique, like I said. Every country's unique, obviously.
Sure.
And we've got a lot of different variation. Each one, kind of the national director in that country, their heart shines through on the project, and you see their personal touch in that. David here, he started out doing water. So mainly what he does is water, although we do feeding programs and, you know, Bible clubs and things like that. And we do that throughout most of the countries. Mm-hmm. But as you get to that country, they each have a unique situation because every country's got their unique culture and their unique feel. We've even got a project in Germany, which surprises people. Like, Germany's not, you know.
Yeah, you wouldn't think, right?
They don't need that, but everybody needs Jesus. So
this episode is brought to you by Elevation Wellness, NEPA's premier wellness center located on Mundy Street in Wilkes-Barre. From pro athletes to busy parents, Elevation Wellness is leading the conversation when it comes to bettering your health through integrative medicine. Founded by NEPA native Louis Helmecki, Elevation Wellness offers physician-formulated and guided treatments that are administered by registered nurses. To learn more about how you can experience the benefits of IV vitamin therapy, multivitamin booster shots, non-invasive aesthetics, or peptide, NAD, red light, and compression therapy, visit elevation-wellness.com or follow them on Instagram at elevationwellnessnepa. All On the Stacks listeners will receive 10% off their first purchase with code STACKS at checkout. Call 570-762-9400 or visit elevation-wellness.com to book your appointment today. Elevation Wellness, taking your health to new heights.
They've got people coming from all over the place. They've got a depressed local community in what was East Germany, and you can still see the effects. You can actually see on the satellite map at night the different colors of the lights, what used to be East Germany and West Germany, because they use different kinds of lighting, gas lights, versus it's disappearing now. But you can actually see the wow. Delineation. There's pictures. And that played into the team working there in this more depressed area. And now we've been getting refugees coming from the Middle East pouring into Germany, and so about 50-60% of our ministry work there is to the refugee families. And so it's almost like the mission field kind of came to them. They were just never even expected that. So just every country has their own unique situation, their own unique culture, and every country's national director that we have, that we work with, has their own heart to do one specific thing. And it just comes right through, and you can see it. Obviously, the fingerprints are here. Yeah, the water's here. Yeah. You can see that. So
yeah, how do you find the locations? Like, and how is that decided? How does that work?
That is tricky. What I was saying earlier with my dad going out into the communities, oftentimes he would visit, he would see people doing the work. So you'd have somebody feeding these street kids. So he visited our team, who's now in Nicaragua. and he was at breakfast with them, and they told me that they had three kids, and there was like five kids at the breakfast table. And he said, what? And why are there, who are these kids? Are they, I thought you only had three. And, oh, these are kids that are on the street. They don't have any food. We're just having them in our house and we're feeding them. Mm-hmm. Same thing for, you know, several other of our project locations. And this, their heart shines through when they're doing it out of the goodness of their heart and not because someone's just paying them to do it. And so we look for people with that kind of attitude and that kind of heart. And we've had long-term relationships with these people that we've identified in that way, where you can see people. We'll start them with a little bit, you know, maybe $50 a month or something like that. And we watch what they do with that. And we watch their heart. And we watch how they work in their communities and what they want to do. And you can see the people that are genuine, authentic, and that's mm-hmm. what they want to do. Yeah. They are doing it because that's their heart. That's the what, you know. And, you know, the Bible tells us there's a command, go and do this. As a Christian, you have a command. Most of the stuff is don't do this, don't do this. This is a command, go and do this. Tell the world. And so that's what we want to do. We want to bring the gospel message to the world, and primarily through children. And our theme verse talks about how Jesus said, let the little children come to me. So that's where Kids for the Kingdom is, because the kingdom belongs to such as these. So that's where that name comes from. And it was coined by our original director in Nicaragua. He said, that's what you should call it. And my dad said, okay, I guess we got a name. And so we went from there. So
take me through the process a little bit. So there's a lot of moving parts here, right? So we have, you know, Lifewater Kenya, mm-hmm. Josh helped raise money. Yep. I'm sure maybe, you know, there's many partnerships mm-hmm. happening here all at once. And so like kind of take me back, like how does it work? Take me through that process a bit.
Yeah. So once we've identified somebody that we are saying, this is our national director, we're going to work with them. We don't have any layers between our main office and the national director.
In the country.
In the country. There's no additional layer of, you know, we've got five people working here that, you know, it's them. It's an indigenous team that's working in the country. And that, you know, always was very unique from our inception. It was a very unique way of doing that. It kind of almost turned the model on its head, where all the work is pretty much done in the country and we've got this little tiny office in the United States, keep our overhead low, you know, have the money go through to all of that. So once we identify them, we, you know, we'll say you are the Kids for the Kingdom representatives, the national directors in, you know, say Kenya, for instance, and we begin working with them, talking with them, dialoguing, relationship, come to visit, see what's going on. And that's one of the number one things, is coming and seeing. When we asked David a long time ago, I have this much money, can we send it for a water well, or should we come and spend it on a plane ticket? I don't want to, you know, waste the money. We'll give people water. And he said, no, you need to come. You need to come and you need to see firsthand. So that's what we do, is we go and we visit and we provide, you know, encouragement. And we provide financial, but it's more than that. It's more of a relationship. We recently had a conference and we had about 90 people, all the directors from around the world come. And it was like having a family reunion. These are all our family, you know? And so really, it feels like you're working with your aunts and uncles and, you know, your family
brothers
members
and
brothers and sisters. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it's, you've got brothers and sisters in Christ, but you know, we've got this huge, you know, it's all relational based. You know, if we didn't have the funding tomorrow, I would still work with these people somehow. And I would still be trying to, you know, encourage them and help them and do those things. So it's not the money, you know, that's driving anybody, any one of us. It's, you know, we know that we recognize in our life that we have a blessing, that we have a blessed life. I have a nice house. I live in a nice place. It's peaceful. Not everybody has that. And so we want to pass that blessing on through. Because I don't think you get to just hold on to stuff. If you just grab like this, you're not going to be keep receiving God's blessing in your life. You're just miserly holding on to it. So passing that through, and that blesses us, and that gives us this, you know, wonderful sense of satisfaction. And so we go both ways. It's not an employee-employer relationship. It's a partnership thing. And so as we identify the projects. We go to the, you know, the location, we talk with them, we see what they need, they communicate with us. We say, okay, we're gonna make our budget, we're gonna figure out what we're gonna fund. We have a really close relationship and we know what we're gonna do. David, like this, where you see these projects like this, he says, I've identified this project, he lets me know. Here's all the stuff that you can have an opportunity to do. And I call him and I say, what do you think is the number one thing? What should we do? And he says, this or this or this. And so we work really closely with them. I'm on the phone with all of the directors almost all the time, every week, daily sometimes, you know, getting to prayer requests, talking to them, what do you need? So it's really a big relational kind of thing, more than just a let's structure all this stuff, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes we were saying before about the layers, like you guys are, you guys have a nice small team. You guys are able to, there's no red tape, you know, because you don't you don't have all those different layers of management and all that. And it allows you guys to be able to, you know, move, you know, move on projects like this. And it's really impressive. But one of the things too that, you know, when I'm going back to like December of 2023 when Josh and I first connected about even coming, you know, us, you know, me and my team even coming here with Josh. But, you know, we talked for like an hour on the phone the first time him and I talked, and he's explaining it to me, and I would say it was overwhelming, but there was so much. There were so many moving parts, there was so much information. I'm trying to wrap my head around how it all worked, and you know, just like you said, like until you're here, like the pictures and the videos and this, like, it's great.
Yeah.
But like, I still feel like it almost just doesn't do it justice until you're here. Yep. Once you're here and you see the people, you know, the adults, the children, you know, all the workers here, everyone, like it really is unbelievable. And it's so hard to, it's almost hard to comprehend, you know, to be able to explain to somebody that's never experienced something like this. So like, I, you know, I obviously highly encourage anyone if they can to be part of something like this, because it's moving. Yeah. It's so moving. Yeah. So for you, I mean, you know, I know you've been to many of these projects, but when you step onto a site like this, and when you know, we cut that ribbon and they fire up that truck, and like, how does that make you feel?
It makes me feel, there's a lot of happiness. I'm happy for the community, you know? It really, you know, they come and they dance and you see all of that stuff. But I've seen a lot of these projects and I know what it's going to do for the community. So I'm happy. I'm proud. You know, it's not about me. I don't, you know, I'm not a big like self promoter. I'm going to get, you know, let's say, hey, I got this all, I figured all these things out. It's because it's not really what it's about, but it is about making this stuff happen. And I love to make stuff happen when these projects are going and this is happening. I can say, listen, I've got this experience, because I've got all kinds of different experiences from living in the U.S. number one, and having, you know, privilege to be able to have different things and live in a nice place and a lot of education. And, you know, you can learn just about anything on YouTube and maybe screw it up, but, you know, I'm pretty technical. And so I am able to say, okay, well, let's figure this out. Let's fix that. Let's do this. Let's do that. I've experience with remodeling things and building things and different, you know, running different projects. And so I'm able to apply all of that stuff that I just was all random knowledge.
Yeah, where did that come from?
It just, you know, just my background, just working in my family business, working, you know, when I was a kid, I worked maintenance. And so I learned how to do, you know, stuff. And just all through my life, you know, being able to go to school, get a business degree, you know, the opportunities that I've had, I can apply that to all this stuff and I can fit the puzzle pieces all together to make things happen. And I just love seeing that when I get to walk onto a site like this and I could see this drill rig going, that it's like, we got this whole puzzle put together. We got all the relationships, you know.
There's a lot going on here.
There's a lot going on. I mean, you know, our local teams are amazing. And that's really who shines. You know, I show up and they're like, get me from the airport and bring me here. And you saw it, you're part of it. And they've got stuff all organized and figured out. And they know David's super, you know, organized. He's got everything. We're going to do point number one, point number two. And he makes sure it happens. You know, he's a doer. And there's a lot of people that are doers. And, you know, I want to be a doer. not somebody who's just kind of like, oh, let's see what happens, you know, and just, you know, there's no coattail riding or anything.
You're constantly saying, we're going to do that. We're going to do that.
There's none of that in ministry, because you're kind of out there, you know, you have to just do it, you know. It's not easy. It's hard. You got to, like you were saying, with all the different things, the different hats that you have to wear to do stuff, you kind of, when you're working in a nonprofit or in something, you kind of have to know, like, the computers go down in my office, I got to fix them, because there's no one else to do it. And I know how to do it, you know? Yeah. So you wear a lot of hats. You try and you just draw on all of the different experiences that you've had all over the, you know, throughout your life, and that my ability to just go and figure and learn something. You know, I'm technical. My mind is technical. My brother's an engineer. I've come from a family of, you know, machinists and engineers and those kinds of things. And so if there's technical details and things, I'm good at figuring that stuff out. So applying that to this kind of stuff, you know, helps me fit all the puzzle pieces together and get all the relationships together. And yeah, so that's really amazing to be able to do it and step on and see it, drink from the water well or whatever, you know, it's awesome.
Yeah. So how about challenges? Like what kind of challenges have you faced over the years? Do you foresee any challenges in the future? What are we looking at?
Challenges? There's always political challenges in the countries that we're ministering in. There can be places that we can't even go because of the, you know, the governments.
Why is that?
That you might have a government that is unfriendly to foreigners coming in, or
just
that's
in general?
Dangerous. Mm-hmm. That's dangerous to foreigners, or distrustful of them, things like that. The local teams, being a Christian in some countries is completely dangerous
and illegal,
or illegal, or you're not allowed to do ministry work. You can be a person that is, you know, a Christian and also have another thing that you do that's, you know, social services,
but you wouldn't
like
be able
that.
To do something like
but,
this,
you know. Yeah, but you wouldn't necessarily be able to come out and just say, we're praying for this water well, and this, and our company is a Christian organization, and we're doing these things. For instance, in China, you know, our team there, they're Christians, but they have to be very careful to work within the government, all of the government rules and regulations, because they're not allowed to, you cannot talk to children about Jesus. You cannot talk to even youth. There's so many different things that they have to do and follow along. And the government knows that they're Christians, and they, you know, they push on them because they say, well, they don't want that. The communist government is, that's their, what they want to promote, and they want to promote the things that they want to promote. And so it's a hard thing for Christians to be able to operate within those, you know, all of those confines. You know, same thing in India. Emmanuel comes from India, Manoj and Dinesh. The government is not, they're anti-Christian. They're not friendly to Christians. So there's a lot of challenges, and it's more local to the people in those countries. Same thing in Nepal. The government is a Hindu government. They're not friendly to Christians. So you'll see that variously throughout the world. And that's a big challenge, especially right now.
Yeah.
You know, funding challenges, and, you know, hey, are we going to fall short of our goals? Are we going to make our budget? Do we get enough to really get these projects that we want done? That's something. That's always something. There's always going to, you know, there's never going to be enough money and enough to fix all of the world's problems. And, you know, the Bible says the poor will always be with you. Jesus says you'll always have the poor with you. And so sometimes that's hard. That's just a mental challenge. You want to help these people. You want to provide things that they need, that you know, to help them to better their lives and to, you know, to share the message, gospel message with them. But it can be really difficult thinking, I'm never going to do everything. I'm never going to fix all of it. And we created a 25-year book that has all these testimonies for our conference.
I think I saw it floating around the other
day.
You
see that, yeah. So that has 25 different testimonies, and some of them are fundamental ministry sort of foundational values, and some of them are just individual testimonies of people that said, this is what happened in my life, this is what God did in my life, this is what can happen for you, and so that everyone can see. And in the beginning of that book, I wrote about the story, and you may have heard this little anecdotal story where there's a boy, there's all these crabs on the beach, and they're stranded, and it's low tide, and there's a boy throwing them in one by one. And the old man comes up and says, what are you doing? why are you throwing the crabs in there? You're never going to save all these crabs. This is, it's just futile. You're wasting your time. And the boy says, as he throws one more in there, he says, matter to that one. So you can think, we'll never fix all this. We'll never get this all done. But if you just have a defeatist attitude about it, you're never going to say, there's one crab, there's one more, there's one more, there's one more. So you just keep doing one more. And if that's all you can do, that's what you do. You know, so that's kind of, you got to think like that when you're doing this, because otherwise you're kind of like, oh man, I'm never going to get all these water wells drawn. We're never going to, you know, fix this and help these people. And we've got people in South Sudan that, you know, are pulling the leaves off of bushes and eating that because they have nothing. And how do you make an impact there? And how do you, you know, how do you do that? You can get dragged down by that feeling. So, you know, you've got to just kind of stay focused and try to keep throwing another crab in.
One at a time.
One at a time. One at a time. Yeah.
So how about your ministry back home? From what I understand, you and your wife are quite the duo.
I don't know who's been talking to you about that, but yeah. So my wife has been singing most of her life, and she's been on the worship team at our church leading worship. So she sings and leads worship at our church, and I play guitar, and I'm lucky enough to get to do that just about every week. I'm missing it this week. But that's a really wonderful, just our own personal ministry that we have in our own church that we're able to, you know, have. We have a wonderful community and wonderful church. The pastor of our church is actually on the board of Kids for the Kingdom. He's one of the board members. So he's been to Kenya, and he knows David, and he's seen the water wells and everything. So we've got a really good relationship there, and we get to serve God in that way at home, doing that, you know, that part of the ministry. And we love it. We get to bring the younger kids, and we're bringing the youth kids up. They're wide eyed and scared, trying to sing into the microphone and teach them how to do it and everything. So yeah, we love being able to do that, and that's just a, you know, another blessing in our life to be able to have. So
Yeah. And so you have four kids, right?
Four kids. I can only make girls.
You're on phase two now, right?
I don't know. We got the older two, and then now the grandson, my second daughter. You know, she was married a couple years ago, so they've got our first grandson, little Peter Emmanuel.
named after him, right?
Yeah, we'll say that. and that's it's so weird. It's such a weird thing, like, just personally, you know. I'm a grandpa, and they're like, what do you want to be called? And
what are you called?
I'm like, I was going for G Rizzle, but that's just not, they're just not taking that one. My wife's not having that. She's
that's my vote.
No.
That's my vote.
And so I'm like, I'm trying really hard. So I'll tell her she won't like that.
I
think it's going to land on Pops.
Pops?
So I'm like, you know, whatever. But you know, they just call you what they call you. Yeah. So we'll see what happens when he starts talking.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, I mean, it's just, it's amazing to have that. Another addition to our family. And I've got two son-in-laws. We love them so much, you know. My older daughter's been married, and so it's a blessing. And my younger girls are, you know, they're involved in the church, and they're amazing. They're amazing little girls. So I'm blessed to have four wonderful, wonderful daughters, and now two sons that I get to be dad to, sort of a little pseudo dad. They've got their dads, but I get to be, you know, an extra dad. So that's fun.
That's very cool. So. Yeah. So what's the future look like for Kids for the Kingdom? Is there anything, you guys working on anything in particular, or just in general, what the future look like?
I never know what the future's gonna look like. sometimes I feel like you're in fog and you just know where the next step, I can see that next step, so I'm just gonna take that next step. But I hope that we do a ton more projects, a lot more things like this.
How many do you have going on? Is there multiple going on at any one time?
19 countries, and in any country it could be multiple projects going on. Some of them have less active projects, some of them have more. I was telling you earlier about Zambia, how we built a school, then a high school, and now a clinic. They've got a farm.
That's impressive.
They've helped feed the school there. They've got 1,300 kids at that project. And she's saying, I want to do a university. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what's happening? So we might have K for KU coming up here in Zambia at some point. I don't know. But I just really don't know. I mean, I kind of, just let God show the way. Where you want me to go? You know, and people will come to me and they'll say, I got this project. And I'm good. I don't think that's right for right now, you know, but let me pray about this. And then they'll come to me and say, I got this other project. And I'm like, you know what? That sounds like that. I think that's what we need to be doing. So hopefully a lot more of these dirt projects with Joshua, because I love my brother Joshua. He's an extra brother. I just add him onto my family, you know. I love being able to come on these trips with him and being able to get to, you know, see what's happening in his life, the blessing that he's got. And there's a lot of people like that, a lot of people that give to Kids for the Kingdom, and, you know, just over the years that have had that same blessing, like Joshua, been able to come to the projects or just give. You know, everybody that's part, that's giving or that comes, is doing the work. It's a big team, you know, and some people, they can't go. So they give a little bit every month, and that's what God wants them to do. And it's all, that's how we get everything done. So, yeah.
So if somebody is watching or listening and doesn't know where to start, doesn't know how to start, what do they need to do? Like, let's pretend we're Josh, right? So Josh called you back in, what was it, 2013 or thereabouts. So if somebody wants to do something like this and partner with you guys, what do they need to do?
So they can go on our website, find out more about what we're doing. It's kidsforthekingdom.org, or they can find us, you know, Instagram. We got YouTube. We're on all the social media. So go look up Kids for the Kingdom on your social media. I'm sure if you put a link on it or whatever on the podcast, you can get it if you can do that. And you can find out more about what we're doing. See if it's something that you're interested in. You can call us. I mean, like Joshua, he just called me up. I'm sitting at my desk and he called me up, and here we are, number six.
You know, just picked up the phone and said,
keep going. We talked. Yeah. I mean, you said you had an hour conversation with him, and I was thinking, wow, how did you get off the phone with Joshua in less than an hour?
It was a struggle.
Wow.
It might have been more, actually.
I mean, he and I could talk like the hind leg off a mule. So
yeah, if the three of us got together for a podcast,
I think we might be nuclear. So
it would never end.
We might not end. That would be dangerous. I don't think we should do that.
No, definitely not.
But so they can go and find us online, see what we're about. You know, they can give that way. They can see the projects that we're doing. Go on our social media. Instagram's great because you can kind of see various things that have been going on. And YouTube's great. If you like YouTube, go on YouTube, watch some of the stuff. You can see stories, testimonies, videos, all the stuff that we've been doing, you know, all of these years. So
yeah. And how many lives have you guys affected to this point? I mean, we were talking a little bit earlier on the ride in, but I'm sure it's in the hundreds of thousands.
I hope it's in the millions over the years. We probably reach maybe 400,000 kids roughly somewhere in that neighborhood every year in some fashion or another, some kind of, with clean water, with a Bible club, with just the outreach, or, you know, some kind of emergency aid, or, you know, things like that. 400,000 children, widows, orphans probably are being, you know, reached over the time span of a year. And so I'm hopeful that it's millions, and I'm never going to meet them all in this life. Hopefully I meet them all when I get to heaven. I don't know if we'll have time to to meet them all, but it's been amazing. It's an amazing journey.
Yeah. Well, I'm grateful, and I feel so blessed to be here. I know this relationship and everything, and, you know, everyone here that we've met, I know there's going to be a lot more to come of this, and I'm sure we'll probably be seeing each other at some point, even though we're on opposite sides of the country.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll be seeing each other.
Love to do it.
You know, sometime in the near future.
Yeah,
so
we can do the nuclear podcast with me, you, and Joshua.
There we go.
Never ending.
I don't know if there's enough time.
There's not.
I don't know if there's enough space on the memory card.
There's not.
But we still have some more time left, you know, on our trip here, so... you know, we still have a few more days to go. You know, we're going to be going and checking out some other sites and meeting some other people, some other towns and villages. And I know the guys look like they're eager to probably to get back.
They're going to get back to the drilling and get this thing, get some water coming out of here.
Yeah,
so.
there was some little coming out over there.
Yeah,
I saw before, but
they'll get it.
So
I'm excited for you to see all the rest of the stuff, and I'm glad you came. Thanks for coming and being here. It's awesome that you want to do this actually here.
Yeah.
I thought when Joshua said that, I was like, this guy is crazy.
Oh, yeah.
He's
going
to fly all the way to Kenya. And now that I met you, now I know. It's great.
Yeah.
But, you know, but you're driven to do it, and it's amazing. It's really awesome. So thank you for doing that. Thank you for, you know, having me talk to you. It's been really awesome.
If you want to see more On the Stacks content, subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/onthestackspodcast or search the hashtag On the Stacks on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn.